You're listening to Radio Berkman, and we want to know, is nothing sacred? Juan Carlos de Martin, Berkman Fellow and co-founder of the Nexa Center for Internet and Society in Torino, Italy, says that the university as we know it is under siege. And, as a university-funded podcast, we had to ask. After almost a millennium of staying virtually the same, the entire institution of the university is facing what Juan Carlos calls a perfect storm. There are formidable forces out there arguing against the university from all sides, from economic to utilitarian perspectives, spanning the entire political spectrum. And according to Juan Carlos, together, they have the power to topple the ivory tower. David Weinberger interviewed Juan Carlos about how University 2.0 can weather the storm.
Using a cliche, a perfect storm is arriving potentially to the university system and to higher education in general. And I'm using this because reading about the university at the beginning of the 20th century, and you end up with the idea that several different currents of criticism of higher education are converging. Very diverse currents, very diverse forces. I would start with the first one, which is being a computer engineer is maybe the most obvious. You hear very often in recent weeks and months, university is ripe for being completely reinvented. University 2.0, 3.0. How come that lectures are still the same like 1,000 years ago in Bologna? And it's very common. Sometimes it's a sales pitch, sometimes it's more serious than that. But this is clearly a trend. People are seeing an entrepreneurial possibility, cost-saving possibilities of using the internet technology and digital technology to completely change the way education is performed in this country and all over the world. In this regard, I just very recently preparing for this conversation, I found out another famous useful quote, Thomas Edison's 1913, thinking about the use of film in education, went on record saying, due to the invention of film, our school system will be completely changed in the next 10 years. It didn't happen. Then something similar again with radio. It didn't happen. Then again, majorly with television. It happened to some extent. The Open University in the UK was a success, but definitely not up to the expectations that they had in the 50s or 60s or 70s. So this is one major trend. Technology is going to change everything. And I'm already introducing a word of caution saying, well, that has been said before and that didn't happen. It may happen to some extent this time because digital technology is more potent, is more powerful than television or radio and or film. The second trend, completely different, is that we have a criticism of education in general, including higher education, that goes back maybe a century or more, which sees education public general education being born at the time of the Industrial Revolution and to share some of the features of industry, meaning that you have big buildings and you have a very structured system of a number of pupils that they all share only one thing, essentially manufacturing date. They all have the same age and they are following the same curriculum in countries like mine in Italy. Or in general in Europe, is the national curriculum dictated from above, from the ministry. So very structured and inflexible way of teaching people. And so there is a very old criticism of this industrial approach to education, because each of us is different, kids are different, we should allow them to teach, to learn at different speed, in different ways. And so this is a second trend that has been there for a long time with very good reason. And they also can see a technology as a way of finally doing something more flexible, teach young people and younger people in a more flexible, individualized way. And then, and this is the second major trend contributing to this potential storm on the horizon. But then there are other additional trends. There is a very clear trend to reduce cost, In the US, is almost every day you find something about college, from the president downwards in newspapers and magazines, the high cost of college, how to control that. But even in Europe, where with the cost of college is definitely much lower, almost free by American standard, still there is a very strong argument saying it's still too expensive, and we have to reduce the cost. We have to be competitive. And now in an age of austerity in Europe, unfortunately, this is even stronger. So again, technology in this third trend is seen as a way of saving money, essentially. We don't need as many teachers. We don't need as many scholars. We can use, again, video or film, like Thomas Edison, to just teach more effectively, more cheaply. And finally, I would mention a fourth trend, which is more political, in the sense that the traditional way of placing people together, particularly college-age kids, in the same place for 4 years or more with professors, had been traditionally, in different countries, including the U.S., has been traditionally a place where political activism can start, very much so at the end of the 60s, all over the world, but more in general, in Greece during the colonial dictatorship. In other places, universities have been a place that some people might call subversive, or other people could call democratic ideas are being preserved or encouraged or nurtured. So there is certainly some political forces that are seeing an opportunity, thanks to the technology, to dilute this concentration, to bring people more to stay in their home or to watch a screen without the bonding experience of being with the same people of their age and sharing experiences, life experiences, to learn from the previous generation of professors their view of the world, not necessarily a political view, but a view of the world, which is inescapably, it's definitely implicitly political in any way. So this fourth trend, which is more implicit, these things cannot be said really openly, is seeing an opportunity of saying, okay, let's disperse these scholars, some of them are troublesome, let's disperse the students, because if they are individualized individuals, they are less politically dangerous in this sense. So if you take all these trends, very, very different, some of them from, you could might call it from a liberal or from the left, some of them from the right, some of them purely functional and economical, if all of them converging in potentially changing the way university functions in the next several years.
Well, that's many more elements than Thomas Edison was facing in 1913, presumably. So if we have the sort of change that is possible now because of this convergence of factors, what should be, can we talk normatively from your point of view, what should be the role of technology in education?
So add another important role, which is, in my view, more clear here in the U.S. than it is in Europe, and certainly than it is in my country, Italy, which is universities as a civic role within the nations, a civic role in helping informing citizens. So students are not only potential future workers, but should be predominantly future citizens. And so they complete their civic education that started at and with lower levels of education, they complete it, and they finally graduate in citizenship, if you want. But also universities, there is one constitutional view in Italy that goes back to Calamandrei, one of the founding fathers of the Italian Republic, who says the education, public education, including universities, are a constitutional organ of the state, meaning are a counterpower, are one of the powers, in the sense that the universities have they have the skill and expertise to analyze complex problems like those we're facing very clearly at the beginning of this century, and provide an honest appraisal of these problems and indicate potential solutions without the suspect that their view is tainted by economic interest or political interest. So this role is extremely important, and we could say, okay, if we agree that we don't only have to produce economic advantages and to give skills, but that we also need a place where a super partis view of problems is produced, that we starting having an articulation of the role of university, which is a bit more multidimensional than just purely economical.
There's at least a fourth value of universities in the U.S., which is as a place that youths go to in order to grow up. That's sort of personal growth. Do you want to put that in the mix, or is that...
Absolutely. Maybe it was not the first coming to my mind, because, as you know, in Europe, the tradition is a little different, but definitely the social role or the personal role of universities is very important. Even in our reduced experience of not really doing campus life, apart from a small minority of people, it's still very important to grow up between the age of 18 to 22, 23, with people of your age trying to do something similar, trying to, you know, to pass exams and so on. So it's definitely important. And actually, we could ask ourselves what society would be if this experience did not exist. If 18 years old would stay at home, maybe watching a screen and learn from a screen.
So we have this perfect storm of factors that might actually cause a sort of disruption that has often been promised, but we haven't actually seen. The university has been a pretty stable institution in our culture. But as you say, there are all these elements coming together. We have a set of values for university, some of which are at odds a bit. So there has been, as you well know, there's been pretty frequent and occasionally heated debate about whether the role of the university is to prepare students for the workforce, or whether they should be taking general education, humanities courses, which may not have any direct application or no obvious direct application to their ability to enter the workforce and the like. So we have the possibility of disruption. We have a set of values about which we don't entirely agree as a mm-hmm. culture, I think. I'm not sure what to ask. What's the outcome, or what should be the outcome? What's the opportunity, or what do you think is going to happen in this?
Okay. It's completely legitimate that people have different views of what university should be. So I can only make my case what I think university should be. And my case is that universities should help in making our democracy stronger. And so I believe personally in a participative democracy, which means citizens that are well-informed and capable not only of critical judgment, but also of active involvement. And if you want that, you need to provide citizens with the skills to do that, which are not necessarily the same skills you need to find a job, are a different set of skills, but very important. So you want to provide the critical thinking that everybody talks about, although it's very difficult to teach, the critical thinking and the actual factual information that you need to understand the world you live in. And then maybe, although it's difficult, but it's part of the civic education, to infuse some of the passion for this experiment, which is democracy. Just very recently, I was reading that democracy in the modern sense of based on universal suffrage, on universal voting, is actually extremely young. We still have lots of people that were born before that was the case, that was in place. So democracy is still an experiment. And democracy, by definition, by constitution, it's fragile. We don't know exactly where it will survive, the next generation, the generation after that. I don't want to be pessimist, but I'm trying to be aware that we have to take measures to strengthen the level of current existing democracies and to preserve for the future generations this achievement that we only very recently managed to create. But let me add something about technology, because actually the interesting thing is that we arrived to study university and in cyberspace. So we started with technology with a very positive outlook, actually. We started saying when I started looking at this problem, well, technology is going to be extremely useful because actually there are amazing opportunities and potential thanks to the same technology that could be used to undermine a certain idea of university that I would like to preserve. The technology can be extremely useful in promoting the idea of a university that in turn is at the service of democracy. And there are a few main avenues. Well, one of them is definitely true that distance education, the same that Thomas Edison was talking about, is happening now at a scale that was much more difficult to achieve in the past. So I was reading about the microwave links, that closed circuits, TV networks of universities in the US. That's difficult. Microwave links are complicated, expensive. The internet is allowing us to reach people in rural areas, poor areas, different parts of the world. So it's definitely true that the technology is going to bring learning to places that for many different reasons and people that were hard to reach. But there is also the other amazing achievement that we've been building in the last 10 years. Almost exactly 10 years ago, the Budapest Open Access Initiative started the open access movement, which essentially consists of making available free online all the research produced by academics instead of having to pay for accessing very expensive journals. So open access, making knowledge, fresh knowledge, not only the public domain or the past, but fresh knowledge directly accessible online for free, it's an amazing achievement made possible by the internet. And going back to the first trend of criticism of education, technology can be used to a much more sophisticated, individualized way of teaching. You can have different people. You can maybe, thanks to technology, pick five different ways of explaining the same topic in much more easier than in the past. So much more easily than in the past. So the person that maybe would not understand calculus or physics because it was taught in the wrong way for him or her, then it's much easier to try to provide other additional ways of presenting the same topic. So again, that's an important potential development. And finally, technology can make also the civic contribution of individual researchers, academics, and universities much more visible in the sense that they, like just like everybody else, now academics can contribute to the public debate much more easily, thanks to social networks, thanks to blogs, mailing lists, and so on. So their role in a society that has been confined until very recently to whether you are an op-ed editor, an op-ed contributor to a newspaper, now you can much more easily reach and contribute to the public debate.
And open access, of course, has that role as well. I mean, it allows the public to read everything. So what should stay the same in the university? I mean, you are not advocating the removal of the university as a physical place and the distributed students, and that's not what you're about. So what needs to stay the same?
Recently, I was presenting to colleagues of mine the proposal to establish a web science made by Tim Berners-Lee and others in the UK. And in making the case for a web science, Tim Berners-Lee was saying the web is a wonderful technology, we should study it, we should study potential evolutions of this technology, but we should also clearly identify what should remain the same, because features that if you change, the web is not the web anymore. And I'd like to take that and use it as an analogy for university, meaning that technology is giving us many opportunities to change the way we're doing things, so and evolve the university in a positive directions. But at the same time, we should be, and I speak as an academic, we should be, but I would also like citizens to think the same, we should focus on what should remain the same. Otherwise, university, we will lose something precious. And what is that should remain the same, in my view? Well, the physical experience is certainly important, and we should be careful that there is a risk that thanks to technology, the physical experience will become even more than now reserved to very wealthy kids and nobody else. So if we think it's a value, it's valuable, we should be careful that it could become even more unequal. Only a tiny minority of people will have the physical experience. That's one thing we should keep in mind.
Because if somebody who today the only option is to pay for a school that he or she can't really afford in order to get the education, if in the future distance education becomes more viable, then they'll opt for that. And so we'll lose the sort of the marginally economically capable students.
Yes, and we have to, as a society, think about that, meaning do we exactly try to appreciate the value of the physical experience, in-person experience, and understand do we want a society where more person will have a degree but will not go through the physical experience? Are we just happy for them to interact on Facebook or other kind of social network or not? I'm not giving an answer. I'm just saying there is a potential to go in that direction and we should wonder about it. The second point that should remain the same is that there is, particularly in the U.S., such an emphasis on cost, on the cost of college. And one of the answers of these new entrepreneurs of University 2.0 wave is, well, I mean, we can make it much more cost effective because a single video can teach thousands of kids. So we can get implicitly what they're saying. We can get rid of lots of teachers. But we are forgetting that at least at the university level, so at the top tier of universities, and actually I would say the most European universities are in the same mold, we have implemented the Humboldtian principle of unity and teaching and research. So actually that teacher in class is not simply reciting a monologue, is in a university somebody also doing research on the same topic. So is infusing, at least in principle, at least on paper, the person is infusing the teaching with an actual life understanding of the topic. And that was the Humboldtian principle that German universities and then actually all universities in the world, they adhere to that standard of unity of teaching and research. So when we're envisioning a world where we reduce the number of academics, and of course I'm in total conflict of interest as I say this, but we're also saying we're going to have less researchers. We're going to have less of these people capable of doing research on the one side and teaching on the other side. It's not provable that the Humboldtian model is the best possible model. Some people are advocating, why don't we separate the functions? Why don't we have pure researchers on one side and pure teachers on the other side? But we have believed in this system for two centuries, and it seems to be, at least in many cases, to work remarkably well. So before we abandon that, we should think carefully about that.
Given all of this, you are optimistic about the future of universities in the age of the Internet?
I'm worried in the sense that I see very clearly the potential for very interesting evolutions, but I also see important forces trying to use this junction, this flexion point, to steer the institution in directions that I personally dislike. So I have a strange mixture of feelings. I'm passionate about the potential benefits that the Internet can bring to university, but I want to work in that direction positively. But at the same time, I feel the need to remind citizens and colleagues and students that in this rhetoric of changing everything from scratch, we can really lose something valuable and important that was coming from us from previous generations.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Juan Carlos de Martin is a Berkman Fellow and co-founder of the Nexus Center for Internet Society in Torino, Italy. You can find out more about Juan Carlos and links to some of his work at our website, blogs.law.harvard.edu/mediaberkman. This episode of Radio Berkman is available under a Creative Commons license, so feel free to remix and share with your favorite university dean. This week's episode of Radio Berkman was produced by me, Frances Harlow, with Daniel Dennis Jones and David Weinberger. from the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University in Cambridge, Massachusetts.